We'd like to welcome you out to the RAC meeting this evening. First of all, we'd like to recognize two of the board members that are here. We have Steve Dalton and Jake Albrecht, who's the board chairman. Appreciate your attendance. And the next thing we'd like to do is introduce the RAC members. Maybe start down here on my far right with Mac.
Mac Morrell, Bicknell, representing agriculture.
Claire Woodbury, Hurricane, represent the public at large.
I'm Dave Black from St. George.
Dale Bagley from Marysville, represent elected official.
I'm Kevin Bunnell. I'm the regional supervisor for the Division of Wildlife.
Harry Barber, BLM from Kanab.
Lane Torgerson, Richfield, sportsman's representative.
Rusty Aiken, Cedar City, agriculture.
Sam Carpenter, Kanab, represents sportsman.
Mike Staley, Delta, public at large.
Mike Worthen, Cedar City, public at large.
Okay, thank you. Just real quickly as a reminder on the meeting order as we go tonight, first we'll hear the presentations and then we'll have questions from the RAC and then an opportunity for the public to ask questions. And then we'll hear comments from the public. So if you have comments, make sure you fill out the comment cards. We have one up here already. So we'll make sure we get to those. And the two officers in the back have the comment cards, so you can see them. And then following the comments from the public, we'll have comments from the RAC, and then we'd proceed for a motion and voting. On the agenda, the first item is that we need to have a motion to accept the RAC meeting agenda in minutes. If we have somebody to do that.
Chair, I'll make a motion. Accept the minutes.
Okay, I have a motion from Rusty. Looks like a second from Lane. All those in favor? Okay, that's unanimous. The next item on the agenda is a wildlife board update. And as we go down through last meeting's agenda, there was a proposed fee change, and they're setting the fees for the coming years, and one of the items on there was the bobcat fee. And at our RAC meeting, they didn't have the information as far as the detailed costs of the program. When we went to the board meeting, they had that information, so that was presented. Our motion here was to raise the fee to $15, and that's the way the board voted as well. And so for the bobcats, the fee is going to change to $15. And then there was also a fee discussed on there that in case they start hunting the ewe, bighorn sheep, they set a fee for that. And that was voted on as proposed, except for the ewe tags, and they voted to raise those tags to $1,000 if those ever go into place for non-residents. The Cougar Management Plan, just as in our RAC meeting, there's a lot of discussion. There was a lot of ideas for change. There was a lot of agreement that there needed to be a change, but the plan is we'll go through the process for revisions this next year. There's a committee that will be assigned to work on that, and so the Wildlife Board voted to approve the plan as presented. They also gave a pretty strong direction that committee needs to come back with a plan that is simplified, that people can understand, and they gave him a year. And I believe they were quoting a Tom Hatch saying that if you guys don't do it, then we'll do it. So I think we can look forward to seeing a good plan or a new plan coming forth. On the fur bearer and bobcat harvest recommendations, our RAC had recommended an extension of 1 week on the tail end, and that was also voted on and approved by the Wildlife Board, and so there will be a 1 week extension there. The turkey depredation rule passed as presented. The transplant sites passed as presented, and that was the locations that came out of our RAC to add some additional transplant sites, and that passed. And then there was the item on the Monroe Mountain Aspen Restoration Program, and if you recall, the Forest Service came here and was looking for a letter of support. Our RAC agreed to support that, and just as well, the Wildlife Board had a letter that they had drafted up in support of that program. So that's all I have as far as a report from the last board meeting. And we'll turn the time over to Kevin now for a regional update.
Okay, thanks, Dave. I'll just run quickly through the different programs in the region. First, from our law enforcement section, as you can imagine, they're heavy into it with the hunts going on. We have had a couple of really good cases that have been made. One that happened a couple of weekends ago, we had a report from a hunter reporting somebody that had killed a bull elk out on the southwest desert. By the time I found out about it, there was a guy in that had been booked into the Beaver County Jail and had already confessed. So that one went really quick, and it all came about because of a help stop poaching report. So those things are critical. If we can get on things fresh, our guys are really good at tracking down and putting all the information together. Like I said, in that one, less than 48 hours, they had it tied up and taken care of. So if you see something out there that you're not sure about, you know, don't hesitate to call. And like I said, if there's nothing to it, our guys are good when they interact with the public. But if there's something that needs to be dealt with, they're very good at that as well. You'll hear a lot from our aquatic section tonight, but just a couple of other updates. The Clear Creek treatment here off the north end of the Beaver Mountain is pretty well done. Fish will go back in that next fall. We looked at that a little bit, some of that just on our way down this afternoon, and it's really, you know, these rains have got it really murky right now, but the work that the division along with the Forest Service has done up there is going to make a big difference in that and in the how that stream looks over the next several years. And then also we've been talking about treating Paiute Reservoir for a couple of years now. When I talked to Richard this morning, that was scheduled for mid-October. When I talked to Richard this evening, it's now scheduled for late November. The reason being that he had a chance to visit with the water master in the meantime, and they won't be shutting the gates on the reservoir until mid to late November. And as soon as that happens, they'll go in and get the treatment done. Still planning on doing that. In conjunction with that, the trout limit on Paiute Reservoir has been doubled just to give people as much opportunity to harvest those fish as they can. However, the fishing's pretty tough right now, which is why we're treating the reservoir because of the chub population. But by this time next year, fishing at Paiute Reservoir should be really good. And so hope everybody's looking forward to that. From our wildlife section, we did another transplant of goats off of the Tushers over to the LaSalle Mountain last week. We took 15 goats. We were hoping for 20, but winds and hot weather, we came up a little short on that goal. There's also a tour scheduled for the goat population on the Dutton on Mount Dutton next Tuesday. If you want more information on that, I'd be happy to pass that on to you. Really good reports coming in from the archery deer hunt so far. People are seeing having a lot of success and seeing some good animals. We have a waterfowl clinic scheduled at Redmond Reservoir this Saturday for kids or anybody that wants to learn more about the techniques and how to get involved with hunting waterfowl. You can call our office and get signed up for that, as well as our youth pheasant hunts at Pavant and Redmond. Those will be in, what's the dates on those, Stephanie, early November? And there's a lot of demand for those, so they fill up fast. So if you have kids, you know, any kids under 17, especially those that haven't had much of an introduction to hunting, that's a really good way to get a kid excited about hunting. And so please call the office and or pass the word out and have people call our office to get signed up for that. From our habitat section, this is really the time when there's a lot of diesel fumes going in the air with all the habitat treatments that are going on, specifically the pinyon juniper treatments. It's almost unbelievable, but just the southern region this year, if we get all the projects done that we have approved, we'll treat 40,000 acres of pinyon juniper just in the southern region this fall, which is the most that we've ever done, and we'll do a lot of good over the next 25 to 30 years. So they're in full swing right now. With the outreach program, Lynn spent several days up involved with the Goat Watch, both the formal event that we do, and then in conjunction with the Paiute ATV, is it a Jamboree Festival? And through, I think over the course of 4 or 5 days, we had more than 975 people, so almost 1,000 people that stopped and had a chance to view goats and had a good experience there. We've also put over 3,000 people through the summer archery program with our outreach program, which is phenomenal, trying to get people introduced and more comfortable using a bow. And then just last week, we hired a wildlife recreation program manager in the region, so you'll see a lot more emphasis coming out with things like the waterfowl clinic and fishing clinics, and this will all, as much as we can, we'll be doing those jointly with the different conservation organizations and trying to get as many new people involved with hunting and fishing as we can and just enjoying the outdoors and wildlife. And then lastly, just make you aware, and this is open for comments if anybody has any, there is a proposal that'll go to the Wildlife Board October 2nd to change up the schedule for RAC meetings next year. So instead of the southern region being first, where, and sometimes we kind of get the short end of the stick being first, and the bobcat stuff from last RAC was a prime example where we didn't have all the information because there's questions that get asked through the process, and the folks from the division are able to then, you know, gather that information and have it ready for the other RAC. So what the proposal is to have the northern and central region go first, and then it would go southern region, southeastern region, and northeastern region, and put us right in the middle, which in my experience and doing a lot of RAC tours, I think that's probably a position where you can have probably maximize the influence of this group, because you have all the information at that point, you have some idea of what the hot items are in the racks, and have a chance to influence the process going forward. So still be on a Tuesday, but in the middle of the process instead of at the very first. Anybody have any thoughts or comments on that I can pass on to Stacy and the board members can hear about? I think it, you know, in order to, if we're thinking about, you know, where to have the most influence, I think that puts this committee in a position to have more influence than they do at the, you know, being very first, because sometimes we don't get all the information that some of the later RACs do, just because, you know, the process evolves as it goes forward. So and with that, if there aren't any questions, I'll turn the time back to Dave.
Can I ask you one question on your
sure,
the habitat work you've done southern Utah? You said you've done or was going to do around 40,000 acres. Can you be more specific? Which units did we do that on?
Oh boy, there's some everywhere. Sam, I'd have to go, let me take it back to Gary and have him send you a list of all the projects.
It's not that important. I just wondered if you knew, did they do some on the Zion? And
yeah, I know there's some on the, well, there's more of that, the expansion of that project up by the Coral Pink Sand Dunes, I think.
We started the Scootumpah piece.
Some on the Scootumpah. A lot of the projects are co-projects with between the division and BLM, and then some on the forest as well.
So. We had our dozer show up yesterday and the chain, and then we promptly got 2.5 inches of rain overnight, so the dozers are sitting in mud right now. But as soon as they can move, we'll start that one up on the Scoot and Paw Country.
Who's the chain?
Said chain.
That's no longer a dirty word.
A little tiny one, don't that?
There's a rumor going around Cedar that we caught the poachers that poached the deer last winter, I guess it was, but the big one south of town.
Boy, that's I wish that I could confirm that. I hadn't even heard the rumor, Rusty, but I get asked that regularly, and so I ask our law enforcement guys regularly if there's any updates. And last I was told, which was within the last couple of weeks, they kind of played out all the leads that they had. And at this point, they're waiting for new information to come forward. A lot of times the way these things go is they'll go cold for a while, and somebody will start feeling comfortable, and then they'll start bragging about it and making comments. And sometimes it's 3 or 4 years down the road, but. That's certainly not one that we've forgotten about, and we'll continue to follow up on any leads that we get.
Thank you, Kevin. The next two items that we have on the agenda are both informational items, so there won't be any action taken. The first of those is the Fish Lake Management Plan by Richard Hepworth.
Quit laughing. All right. I'm going to talk about both the Fish Lake and Boulder Mountain plans. I'll pause between them so you guys can ask any questions. I'll touch on the Fish Lake one first. A few years back, actually kind of started with Panguitch Lake in our region. We started doing these sport fish management plans. Some of you have been involved and helped with some of those. We've done Panguitch Lake, Kolob, and Minersville so far. Basically, when we've got some issues, problems, concerns, controversy, especially on some of our more popular waters, where we got people that have very diverse opinions on how they should be managed, this is a good way to sit down with a group of anglers that have different opinions and start throwing ideas out there and find ways of managing these waters that benefit the most people. So this year we tackled Fish Lake and the Boulder Mountains. They were two fairly big ones, but we ended up with really good plans out of these. Really quick, I just want to run through the process that we go through when we develop these plans. And the first thing, there's no reason to do one if everything's going great. You got a great fishery, everybody's happy. So there's no reason to do one until you got some kind of a problem or a concern like I talked about, and you know what that is, and you need to find a solution or a way to fix that. And then the way we've handled it, we've conducted a public opinion survey. Basically, we put a survey out there, ask a bunch of different questions about the specific water, and find out what the public wants from that place. So Fish Lake, we asked them, what species in Fish Lake are most important to you? And some different questions like that. We also asked for contact information and asked people if they'd be interested in serving on a committee. And then we go through all those answers, look at the different answers, and we start picking people to be on that committee based on how they answered the questions. And we try and get as diverse a group as we can. So we try and get as many people that have different opinions. But we also look for people that we think are going to be willing to have a good discussion, that are willing to compromise, and those kind of things as well. So it's not an easy thing to do because we don't know most of these people. We just kind of start going through and looking at how they answered questions and pick a group. And then we also try and pick if we've got guides in the area. We try and make sure we got somebody that represents guides. We invite local governments, county commissioners, for example. Forest Service, if it's on Forest Service land, we try and get a representative from them. We do the same with BLM. Water users, if it's applicable to the situation, we'd invite them as well. And then we sit down with this group and we start finding out what they want and start identifying specific goals and objectives. When we do this, that the most important part we found is to make sure that we get measurable objectives. That way, when we go back after we've got this plan and we start doing things that we spelled out in the plan, we can go in and evaluate and see if we're making a difference because they're measurable. If we just say improving the fishing, that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So we specifically say how many fish we're going to catch in a net when we sample, or what the catch rate's going to be by anglers, those kind of things that we can go out and measure. And then we identify the actions and tools that we're going to have to do to get these specific waters to a state we want them. So that's the process. So Fish Lake, I'm going to start with what's the problem or why did we think we needed to make a change up there? Well, the first thing that was pointed out or that we saw up there that the real problem is we stock 200,000 8-inch rainbow in Fish Lake every year. That costs the Division of Wildlife almost $175,000 a year to stock those fish. We're only seeing about 10,000 of those fish per year harvested. We also know that about 50% of those go to feeding lake trout every year. So we're spending, you know, close to $90,000 a year just to feed lake trout up at Fish Lake. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? It's a lot of money going into it, but it's one of those things that we didn't know if we could continue to do. So that was the one problem. The second problem that we identified up there is the yellow perch. They were illegally introduced back in the 1970s. Their population has expanded to a point they're stunted. They see really slow growth. We very seldom see them over 7 inches. They average right in that 5 to 7 inch range. They've essentially wiped out the Utah chub in the lake that the lake trout used to rely on to eat. And they just don't provide a good forage or a good food source for our lake trout and our spike in there. So we conducted a survey. And what we found in the survey, that the most important fish in the lake were lake trout and splake. That's what people really go to Fish Lake to catch. They go up there knowing they got a chance of catching a big lake trout, but they go home happy with splake or maybe rainbow, or in a lot of cases they go home with some of those perch. So lake trout was really what stood out in this survey as being important and what people wanted us to maintain. That's what the lake's been known for a lot of years. So we put together a committee. The committee comprised two county commissioners from Sevier County here. They knew how important that lake was to the local economy, and they were very interested in being part of this. We had a representative from Fish Lake National Forest, from the Blue Ribbon Advisory Council. We had both lodge owners up there that were part of it, and then seven anglers, just kind of at-large anglers that were interested and wanted to be part of this. To start with, we haven't put together a mission statement. What's the ultimate goal of this, kind of a broad goal for Fish Lake? And I'm going to just really quick read that to you. It's develop a Fish Lake fishery management plan that will improve the overall quality and health of the fishery and aquatic environment while maintaining diversity and increasing overall value to and use by anglers. So with that, we went into developing goals. And I think they got seven goals here that I'm going to go through. Now, I'm not going to get into a lot of detail on this plan. There's a lot of detail in it, and we just don't have time tonight. Hopefully some of you have had a chance to at least skim through the plans that were sent to you. But I'm going to go through these seven goals. The first one, and the most important to this committee, was to maintain a healthy lake trout population. The second one was to manage perch populations to improve quality and size and reduce the impacts of perch on other fish species. We know up at Fish Lake, chances are we can never get rid of the perch. They're there to stay. But we might be able to do some things to reduce their numbers and get rid of some of those negative effects they're having on other fish. And at the same time, if we reduce their numbers, chances are we're going to increase the size of them, make them more valuable to our anglers. They wanted us to look for opportunities to create additional shoreline fishing areas at Fish Lake. Those people that have been up there know Fish Lake has basically got a ring of weeds all the way around it. It's a Eurasian milfoil that come into Fish Lake or was introduced into Fish Lake about the same time the perch come in, sometime in the 70s. It's a noxious weed. It really gets thick, and it pretty much eliminates any shoreline fishing up at the lake. In some of our surveys, it's almost unmeasurable how much shoreline fishing. You almost have to have a boat or fish the lake through the ice. So they wanted to see if we could find ways to improve that opportunity up there. Protect the lake from any more aquatic invasive species, such as Eurasian milfoil, quagga mussel, things like that. They wanted to make sure we protected it from any more of those kind of things. They wanted to look at some new species to increase the diversity of angling opportunities and see if we couldn't help some of the other fisheries up there at the same time. And then maintain consistent angling opportunities during summer and winter months. In the last probably 10 years, that the winter fishing up there has been a lot better than the summer fishing. And the lodge owners rely more on that summertime fishing pressure than the winter. In fact, one of the lodges closes down during the winter, so they wanted to see if we couldn't find ways to improve that summer fishing. And last, increase numbers of fish that occur in low numbers, such as brown trout in the lake. That was one of the things they talked about. So I'm not going to go into all the objectives, but we have objectives associated with each one of those goals that we can actually measure and say, yes, we've met that goal, or no, we haven't. But I want to touch on some of the tools that the committee come up with to meet those goals. And the first one we need to, and you'll hear more about this from Drew's presentation on the regulations, but they suggested a regulation change. To right now, you can keep four trout at Fish Lake. Only one can be over 28 inches. What we found up there, especially with the lake trout, once they get to about 24 inches or bigger, they convert and grow into a big fish 30-plus inches real quick. And so we had this little gap in there between 24 and 28 inches that they wanted to fix because they wanted those 24 inches to get up to 30-plus inches. So they want to drop that 28-inch mark down to 24. So the regulation you'll hear from Drew is a four-fish limit, one over 24 inches instead of 28. Second one was stock kokanee salmon. Kokanee salmon were stocked in Fish Lake one time back in the 70s. They persisted to some degree for about 15 years in the lake. We've got approval through Salt Lake office to go ahead and move forward with stocking the kokanee salmon. There's two thoughts here. One, they'll provide an additional sport fish that may help that summertime fishing up there. And two, they may provide some of that additional forage fish that Fish Lake needs for those lake trout. The one advantage we have over kokanee have over the rainbows, we can stock them at a smaller size, and they should provide some natural recruitment in the lake that we do not get from rainbows. So we should get fish spawning and reproducing on their own that gives us more fish than what we can get by just stocking rainbows. The next item was introduce milfoil weevil to reduce that weed bed up at Fish Lake. We actually put those in back in the first part of July. They were introduced into the lake. The Blue Ribbon Advisory Council and the Habitat Council and the Department of Ag all pitched in money to help us get these weevils. We put in 60,000 weevils at a cost of about $50,000 to get those. They'll go in for about 3 years. We'll be evaluating those. Actually, Thursday this week will be our first time to go up and look at it. But based on all the literature review, all the studying we did prior, this has a good chance of reducing that weed bed up there long term around 50% or better. So this really has the potential of making a big difference up at Fish Lake. We're going to look into constructing possibly some shoreline jetties or piers up at the lake. And then the other regulation change we'll be proposing tonight is remove the perch harvest limit. Allow people to take as many perch home as they want, and also make it legal for them to dispose of those perch however they want. So with that, that's kind of a quick summary of the Fish Lake plan. I'll go ahead and take any questions and stuff before I move into the Boulder plan.
Any questions from the right? Sam?
On these bow weevils that you're planting, does anything feed on them? Are they...
for that expense? That seems like...
Well, that was one of the major questions and concerns we had going into this. And based on the places they've used these in other states, they have not had issues with perch or some of the other fish we have in fish lake feeding on them.
Okay, so will they reproduce? Or
yes, they will reproduce. And
eventually they could take all that weed out then.
They probably won't ever eliminate the weed. What they found in other locations is you end up with kind of this predator-prey cycle, where some years you may have a reduction of maybe up to 90% of the weeds, but then you have die-offs of the weevils, and the weeds will come back, and then the weevils get strong again and knock it back. So you're going to see a fluctuation most likely up there. But on a long-term kind of level, we expect to see possibly up to 50% or more reduction in those weed beds.
Mike?
I see in the information that we were sent that there was only 40,000 fish introduced into Fish Lake this year.
That's the splake
and splake and the
and tiger trout. Yes, that's in combination.
And no rainbow trout.
No, the rainbow trout are stocked every year. And
but it doesn't show in 2014 any being stocked.
In that plan, it might not have, but they go in 100,000 in the spring and 100,000 in the fall. And they'll continue unless if the kokanee program starts to take off and work really well, the idea or hope is to reduce those rainbow numbers to some degree as well and make that balance a little bit better. But as of right now, we continue to stock 100,000 in the spring and 100,000 in the fall.
Okay. Another question. Doesn't relate to this a little bit, but we have a hatchery in Loa, and is that being closed?
As far as I know right now, it's being shut down.
And why?
Because the need wasn't there, and we have a snail issue there, an exotic species that we can't stock fish out of there into certain places. And right now, from my understanding of that, is the need wasn't there to keep that open at this time.
I mean, you have enough hatcheries producing enough fish that you can, without Loa, to restock all the lake?
Yes. Mike?
Yeah, Richard. On your kokanee program, it appears in this plan that the previous kokanee stocking was a large part not successful because lack of spawning areas. Is that the case? And if so, is this going to be back into the trout issue of restocking every year just to maintain those kokanee populations?
When that was done back in the 70s, I couldn't find for sure what kind of strain of kokanee was used, but one of the issues at Fish Lake is we don't have a big stream river coming in that those kokanee generally spawn in. However, in the last 5 to 10 years with strawberry and flaming gorge kokanee, they developed a lake spawning kokanee. These kokanee are spawning actually in the lakes, not necessarily running up the streams. And so that's the strain of kokanee we're trying to get for Fish Lake, because we've got a lot of underwater springs. We've got good spawning opportunities in the lake out in front of Twin Creeks, for example. And you're right. I mean, there's still some questions on whether this kokanee situation will work or not. The other thing, back when it was done before, it was a one-time stocking. They put them in 1 year and then just waited to see what had happened. Obviously, it worked for a while because they persisted for about 15 years in the lake. We know that we're going to have to do some type of stocking continuously up at Fish Lake with the kokanee. We're hopeful it won't be at a real high level, that we'll have enough natural recruitment in the lake that those numbers won't be as high as what we have to do with the rainbow to maintain it. We're hoping overall this will be a reduction in costs to the program up there and at the same time improve the fishery. At least not an increase in cost. That's the one thing we can't do is start increasing the cost of stocking up there. That makes sense? Okay.
Anybody else?
On the, it says if you get the perch under control up there, you do some transfer of chub from other reservoirs and Paiute, I guess, Otter Creek and a couple others. What would it hurt to put perch in some of those reservoirs that we have a chub problem, or are they not cohesive with it, I guess?
Well, perch, in a lot of cases, the problem we have is they overpopulate a lake, just like they've done up at Fish Lake, or you end up with this boom-bust cycle. Somewhere like Paiute, they may be a possibility down the road. We're treating it. We're going to go back with the same plan that we've been doing for the last 25 years there. Once that fishery crashes, and we're pretty confident it will because it has every other time, then we're going to set up a similar committee and go through this exact process for Paiute. And it may lead to perch as one of the answers there. But what we found with perch across the state is you never have a real consistent fishery. You always end up with these booms and busts, or you end up with a situation like we have at Fish Lake, a lot of small stunted perch. So that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you. Oh, excuse me. Could we have you come up to the mic and state your name, then we get down the record as well?
Danny Washburn, and I just wanted to ask him if they considered anything on improving the launches, because some of the launches up to Fish Lake are a good reason why a lot of people don't go and take their boats, because it's terrible. And if we're going to build jetties or whatever, could we build a good launch up there somewhere?
Thank you.
Yes. In fact, I don't know that it's necessarily in the plan, but we have been working with county commissioners and others right now to develop a little better launch down, possibly by Joe Bush. Chances are it's a couple years out with getting funding and everything else, but we are working towards finding a little better launch, because I agree the launches we have are tight, shallow, and so we will be looking at some of that.
Hold on just a second. DeLoss, do we have any more questions from the board? Okay. We'll get to you in just a quick second, Claire.
Yeah, you mentioned the tiger trout. Where do they fit in the plan up there?
The way we put them into the plan, in the last 3, maybe 4 years, we've struggled sometimes with raising the spike we need for our statewide needs, and so we've had to make some cuts at Fish Lake. This year was the second year those cuts have had to be made. And prior to that, we didn't have really a good way to replace those fish we missed with something comparable. We've got approvals, and we're going to use tiger trout up at Fish Lake on those occasions where we're short on the splake needs we have. So our splake quota is about 60,000. This year we were short to 23,000 on our splake, and we got an additional 20,000 tiger trout. And I'm still looking for more tiger trout to put in there to get us up to that 60,000. So they're there as a replacement for our shortages on splake.
Are they similar to splake? And I know the tiger trout are very predatory on some of these.
Yeah,
are they similar?
Very similar. You know, they may hang out a little bit shallower than splake do, or splake is a cross between brook trout and lake trout. Tiger trout are a cross between brook trout and brown trout. So they have a little bit different behavior, but they fill that same niche or that same, you know, food requirements, things like that. So they'll be very similar, and they may be even more catchable during the summer months than what splake are.
Okay, we'll turn the time over to the audience for questions. DeLoss, do you want to come forward?
DeLoss Christensen, Glenwood, Utah. Had the privilege of participating on this committee, and I just want to commend the folks from the division that administered the committee and prepared the document that you've seen tonight. I've been on lots of different committees for wildlife over the last 35 or 40 years. I've never been on a committee where there was better information presented in a more succinct, understandable way than Mr. Hepworth and the folks that held this committee did on this effort. It was just outstanding. Any questions we had, any concerns that anyone had on the committee were answered directly. They were very honest, and there was really no disagreement from the anglers and the others that served on that committee with the proposals that they made. So I just want to thank them for their effort. It was an excellent committee. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments. Do we have any other questions from the audience? Please come forward.
So I have a curiosity question. We're going to stock less rainbows at Fish Lake, and we're going to put in more kokanee. Is the reason why we're not going to have as many rainbows, is that kind of a direct result of that hatchery closing?
No, the reason for the rainbows, the fish are still there, and they'll still be there to be used in other places. The reason behind this, more or less, is because of that cost. The cost of raising those rainbows is a lot more than what the cost of raising these kokanee is going to be. So we're trying to reduce overall costs, and that really played into the Loa fish hatchery as well, as just the overall costs associated with running that hatchery for fish that we really don't need.
Sorry, I forgot to state my name. It's Sean Saunders. I live in Wayne County. Follow-up question. Of the hatcheries in the state, which ones have been closed because of snails?
What's that? If you'd like to, it might be good. As far as I know, no other hatcheries have been closed at this time because of snails. But...
My name is Paul Birdsey. I'm the Coldwater Sport Fish Coordinator with the Division of Wildlife Resources. The Loa hatchery has been recommended for closure this year, or probably next year, actually. Simply, as Richard said, the cost of maintaining that facility in the face of having the New Zealand mud snails infestation at that hatchery made it just not economical, and we really don't need to fish. We currently produce about 1.2 to 1.3 million pounds of fish in our hatchery system right now, most of which are rainbow trout. And that actually is more than what is recommended for stocking by our various managers. The Loa facility, for example, is capable of producing somewhere in the neighborhood of 160,000 pounds of fish per year. It does so well, and it does so very efficiently, but because of the New Zealand mud snails, where we cannot stock those fish except in areas where we have the mud snail, they've only been able to produce about half to one-third to one-half of that, anywhere from 50 to 70,000 pounds per year. So that, in fact, increased the cost per pound there. We can raise fish in Springville or Fountain Green, haul them to Fish Lake for less money than it's costing us to raise them at Loa right now. So it really comes down to how can we achieve the goal of providing good fishing statewide at the most economical cost, because I buy a fishing license like everybody else. I don't necessarily want to see my costs go up as a result, especially as a result of inefficiencies. So, and no other hatcheries have been infested with mud snails to date, and no other ones have been closed.
While you're up there, can I ask you a question? What's the reason rainbow costs so much to produce compared to the other fish you're doing?
Well, actually, rainbow, it depends on the size of the fish, okay, for 8-inch fish. But if you take just the average of all the fish that we raise statewide, everywhere from fingerlings up to catchable size fish, it costs about $3.40 a pound if we average out all of those fish statewide. Some are more expensive than that. If we raise Bear Lake cutthroat trout, for example, like we have at Panguitch Lake, those fish actually cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $4.50 a pound. If we raise fingerling rainbow trout, they're probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 or 90 cents a pound. But if we average them all out, it comes out to around $3.40 a pound. And that's the number that Richard used to calculate that $175,000, was just that average cost for the every pound of fish that we produce in the hatchery.
The biggest reason for the cost savings on the rainbows and kokanee is the rainbows are stocked at about 8 inches. Kokanee will be stocked closer to 4 inches. So that the weight, total pounds that will be stocked of the rainbows versus kokanee is a lot less. The rainbows, we have to stock them bigger to try and avoid as much of that lake trout predation. Kokanee will do better at avoiding that predation than the rainbows do. Does that?
That makes sense, Matt.
Okay.
Okay. Another question?
So I have a couple of questions.
What will the division,
Jake Albrecht, Glenwood, what will the division do with their property in Loa then?
There is, although we don't plan on operating the facility, we don't have any proposal at this point in time of getting rid of the facility per se. We are going to essentially, as I understand it, mothball it, just in case we need that production in the future. If at some point in time we need it in the future, we will have to tear that facility down, go through and rebuild it completely, make it more secure from the mud snail. So we're looking at a $10 to $12 million investment, but we do have good water there, and we certainly, you know, are keeping that, I guess you could say we're keeping that card in our pocket to say that if we need it in the future, we'll go there.
Okay, so he answered the second part. Thanks.
At this time, I'd like to recognize Greg Sheehan that joined our meeting. He's the director of the Division of Wildlife Resources.
And
Mike Styler. He's the DNR director as well. So we appreciate you joining our meeting this evening. Do we have any other questions from the audience on this item?
So I'm kind of curious still about catchable kokanee. We've got all these areas on Fish Lake around the edges that make it not very fishable to the average angler. And I think those harvest numbers, I think a lot of those are probably due to not boaters, it's probably the anglers that are fishing from the bank. So my curiosity is, with the kokanee, are they going to be, we know they're going to be in the lake, but are they going to make it more catchable for the average angler than rainbows?
We don't know that for sure. It may or it may not. Kokanee, in a lot of cases, there's a learning curve that's required there that our anglers are going to have to go through. So my thought is, to start with, catch rates may go down a little bit. But then again, we're not necessarily going to decrease those rainbow numbers until our kokanee are at a point where the catch rates are better as well. So we're going to watch that real close. I mean, the whole idea of this is to maintain and possibly improve the fishing up there. So if we see introducing kokanee as reducing or hurting that, then obviously we'd probably suspend that program and not continue.
Thank you, Richard. Well, it looks like you're up next for the next item, which is the Boulder Mountain Fish Management Plan.
Right, so let's move into it. Same kind of a process went into this one. The biggest difference here is instead of dealing with one lake, we were dealing with 82 different lakes on the mountain, which really kind of complicated, in a way, this process, but it also made the process a little bit easier for us to go through as well. So to start with, some of the problems or some of the things we were hearing or heard from our anglers that they wanted us to fix up there was, one, was fish size. They'd seen over the last number of years that in a lot of our lakes, the size of the fish was declining. The second thing up there was habitat. We know we have a number of lakes up there, and in the past, well, number of lakes in the past 5 to 10 years that have just stopped overwintering fish. Historically, they used to grow great brook trout, big fish, but in the last few years, we're getting winter kills almost every year. So that was one of the problems they wanted to address. And then the other issue was we have a handful of lakes up there that are producing great fishing right now. And public perception of that is that those lakes are getting fished too hard. I go up there and all I see is people, and they don't like that. Boulder Mountain's a place people like to go to get away and maybe be alone and have a lake to themselves. But the best fishing lakes were getting a lot of pressure. So one of the things they kept suggesting is let's make some more lakes like these that everybody's going to and start spreading that pressure out a little bit more so we're not seeing as many people at each lake we go to. So here again, we conducted a survey, found out a little bit more. Trophy brook trout was what everybody wanted more of up there. That was kind of the bottom line of the survey. Put together a committee. On this committee, we had two people from the Dixie National Forest, fish biologist and one of the recreation people. We had somebody from the Blue Ribbon Fisheries Advisory Council. We had somebody from the RAC, Rusty Aiken, participated with us on this one. And then we had seven anglers, one of which was a guide out of Loa. Again, we had them put together a mission statement, and I'll go ahead and quickly read that. Develop a sport fish management plan that will maintain and or improve the quality, diversity, and uniqueness of the fisheries in Boulder Mountain Lakes. So we moved on to goals and objectives, and we struggled quite a bit at first on how we were going to approach this. Do we do separate goals and objectives for every lake? Do we set one big goals and objectives for the whole mountain? What we ended up doing was deciding on some different management concepts that we could apply to a specific species of fish within an individual lake. And we come up with four options here. One is trophy, which is characterized by large fish. In fact, if you look down at the objective, what that means is 10% of the fish in the lake or trout in the lake will be bigger than 3 pounds, or 10% of grayling would be over 16 inches. That would qualify as a trophy fishery. Quality is maybe not as big a fish, a little bit easier to catch. That means 80% of the trout in the lake are between 1 and 3 pounds. And then an opportunity lake, one that's got a lot of fish in it, they're fairly easy to catch, chances are there's not going to be many big ones. We said about 100% of those will be under 2 pounds. And then conservation has to do with our native cutthroat we have in the area. And a handful of the lakes on the mountain are managed for native cutthroat as part of conservation agreements, and so we maintained that in there and identified those as we went through as well. Then we went through and we talked about every individual lake on the mountain. And obviously I don't have time to go through all those, so I just kind of threw an example up here. You guys should have copies of those. This is the North Creek Lakes, or the lakes over by the Barkers. What we did is every single lake we talked about the species of fish that are in the lake, and it possibly, if we wanted to change that, what other species may be good. Do we want to get rid of one of those, put a new one in? And then we defined how those fish would be managed. So if you look at Barker Res at the very top, brook trout and rainbow trout. And those will be managed. One, the brook trout is a quality, and the rainbow trout is opportunity. That's exactly how that lake's been managed for the past 15, 20 years. And so it's there right now. So all we need to do to do that is continue to monitor that to make sure it stays at that area. If you look at Lower Barker Reservoir, that's the next one. That lake was managed exactly the same as Barker Res. It was managed with some brook trout and some rainbow trout. The committee decided those were right next to each other. You can drive to those. Let's make one of them a little bit different than the other and maybe attract or have more people that utilize that one. And so what they decided to do is stop with the rainbows and the brook trout and go with tiger trout and splake. And then open that up to ice fishing, and splake are a great ice fishing fish, and it opens up another lake on the mountain to allow that. So they decided let's go with tigers and splake, and let's make them somewhere in that trophy to quality range. We don't know for sure how they're going to do. They've never been in there, but let's see how they do, but let's shoot for somewhere in the trophy quality range. So all that was going to take on our part was stocking adjustments. And you can go down the list and look at these, but we did that for every single lake that we knew supported fish on the mountain, identified what we wanted in the lake, what we didn't. Some of the major things, brook trout, the number of lakes with brook trout stayed almost the same. We did increase the number of those that will be managed for more trophy fish than where we're at right now, at more of that quality to opportunity range. A lot more lakes will be getting a handful of tiger trout. In fact, they identified quite a few lakes that they want to just put a few tiger trout in with the brook trout, but they want them to only 25% or less of the fish in the lake to be tiger trout. So we're just going to throw a handful into a number of different lakes up there with the brook trout and see how they do. We identified a few lakes that for trophy grayling. And then we also identified lakes that are conservation. Our cutthroat lakes reduced a little bit on the mountain. Tiger trout lakes increased. Grayling stayed about the same. Brook trout stayed about the same overall. And there's some tables at the end of that plan that kind of give you some of that information. Some of the tools or actions that the committee recommended that you'll hear more about again when Drew gives his presentation. Regulations up on the Boulder Mountain for the past 7 or 8 years have been a little bit complicated. You had a slot limit up there. You can only keep two fish over a certain size, and then you had a bonus brook trout limit. Looking at this, the committee said that the biggest problem we have in most of those lakes up there, and the reason we're not seeing as big a fish, is we got too many fish in a lot of these lakes. And part of that goes back to that regulation and some other things, some overstocking that's happened in the past. So what they recommended and saw that made a lot of sense on the mountain was just go back to the general four fish limit. It's easy for the public. It's what we need up there with some additional harvest. And we could see that it probably wouldn't hurt the mountain at all to have some additional harvest up there. So they recommended a four fish limit on the Boulder Mountain, except for two lakes, one of which is Doherty Basin, which is our brood lake for cutthroat trout, and the other one is Oak Creek Reservoir. Oak Creek Reservoir has slowly been going downhill with the size of fish in there. They talked a lot about possibly doing a treatment and going back with sterile brook trout, but they wanted to try this increased limit first, see if we could harvest enough fish out of there to see the fish size increase. So they recommended a 16 fish limit at Oak Creek Reservoir to see if we couldn't knock them back that way. The other recommendation on regulations that you hear about is the ice fishing. The mountain's been closed to ice fishing except for a handful of lakes that we identified as being open. We're reversing that. We're opening the mountain to ice fishing and identified a handful of lakes that we can see there could potentially be a problem with ice fishing. Those lakes will be closed. So the list here in the presentation and in there shows which lakes would be closed to ice fishing. The rest of the mountain would be open. Stocking adjustments, this is the majority of what's going to take place on the mountain, from reducing some of the quotas on the mountain to making some changes in species. Good example here, too, is Cooks and Miller out on the northwest side of the mountain have historically been stocked with catchable rainbow trout. They struggle with winter kill. They recommended using some catchable tiger trout in place of rainbows just to make a little bit different experience in those two lakes. So you'll see some more tiger trout stocked, some different little bit changes up there that way. Habitat. There was a number of things they identified as far as some habitat work that could be done up there to help. Dam repairs. We have a couple lakes up there that are in need or have been in need of dam repair for a long time. We've tried in a couple cases over the years to fix some of these. We're going to go back and revisit and see if we can fix them again. Middle Donkey, for example. Chris Lake, for example. And then we know McGath Lake needs some dam repairs. So there, some spring development, Pacer Lake on the west side of the mountain over out of Anemone. We're going to see if we can fix that spring up a little bit to help overwinter fish. And then some aeration devices. Wyoming's had some really good success with some solar aeration devices. Boulder Mountain, if you've ever been up there and seen some of those lakes, there's some really old windmills that were tried. I think they were probably tried back in the 70s. They didn't work so well because during the winter they'd freeze up and have problems. But from what Wyoming's telling us, these things are working really well out there. We're going to try and get a couple of those and put them on a couple lakes and see how they do for us on the boulders. And then some vegetation control and some lakes like Posey Lake. It was identified that come fall, that one gets really hard to fish because the vegetation gets so thick. So we're going to work with the Forest Service to see if we can do something to help control some of the vegetation in the lake. And then rotenone treatment. There was four lakes that were identified to possibly do rotenone treatments to get rid of stunted brook trout populations and replace them with other more desirable fish. Those lake Garcane East Impoundment, Mosman Lake, Donkey Lake, and Blue Lake. The committee did say that Oak Creek, we wanted to try the 16 fish limit first. If that didn't work, we may move in this direction. They identified Donkey Lake as the most important one that they wanted us to start moving forward with first. Then Mosman, Blue, Oak Creek Reservoir, that was kind of their priority list. So we'll start moving in that direction. And then really quick, I just wanted to touch on, we'll be doing, we're moving forward with some other management plans. Lake Powell will be the next big one we're going to work on with the quagga mussel infestation there and the changes that are going to start happening there. We figured now's the time to get on that, see if we can get ahead of that and maintain some of the good fishing we've always seen at Lake Powell. Jackson Flat Reservoir, that's the new reservoir just outside of Kanab. We're going to be moving forward real soon with some meetings down there in Kanab to see if we can't put together a plan for that lake. And then the Sand Hollow Complex, which includes Gunlock, Quail Creek, and Sand Hollow. We're going to work on that. That'll probably be a year or two out, but those are ones that'll be coming that we'll be presenting to you here in the future. And with that, I'd take any questions again.
Do we have any questions from the board? Claire?
So you mentioned that a main problem in the last few years has been the winter kill. Is that solar aeration one, is that kind of the prime way to treat that, or are we getting lakes that are silting in, or what is the problem there?
Some of that, I think some of it's just been some of the drought conditions we've been faced over the last 5 to 7 years, but yes, the aeration devices will help with that, the spring develop can help with that, and even some of the dam repairs in some of the lakes may help with that. Vegetation control can also help with that too.
Anybody else? Mike?
Yeah, regarding the tiger trout planting, I was talking to a couple of anglers this past summer that had fished up in King's Pasture, which I believe is probably the Garcane East Impoundment, and they said all they're catching out of there is tiger trout out of that impoundment. The brook trout are totally gone in there, and if I was an angler looking for a good quality brook trout and you're putting tiger trout in there, I'd be a little concerned that the tiger trout are going to eat them out of house and home.
The brook trout in that lake, we poisoned that 3.5 years ago, something like that, five years ago. I'm trying to get rid of the brook trout. They were stunted, and we're trying to restore that Boulder Creek to a cutthroat stream. We've got native cutthroat in the very headwaters of that stream that are really threatened by the brook trout in there. We got one treatment done, had some problems with, well, not problems, some concerns from Boulder Town and some issues with Garcane settlement agreements, some lawsuits, some things like that that's put that back. But we didn't want to lose the fishing in that lake in this time that all this is trying to get sorted out. So we put the tiger trout in there so there is a fish in there for people to catch in the meantime.
Okay, that's good to know.
Anybody else? Do you have any questions from the audience? Okay, come forward and please state your name.
My name is Matt Sim. I'm from Wayne County. By the way, I'm really excited about the management plan that these guys have put together. My question is how will you monitor all these lakes from year to year? Just going to do like gill net surveys or, I don't know.
That's a real good question. Yes, it's mostly going to be gill net surveys. We rely a lot on angler reports. Those help us a lot. In the past week, we've got six lakes done up there. But yeah, that's with 80-something lakes on the mountain. Monitoring is going to be one of the toughest things for us to get completed, but we're committed to doing the best job we can with that.
Just a follow-up question. I know you talked about angler, you know, reports and different things. You know, there's two or three guides in Lola. Are you going to rely on their expertise to kind of tell you what's going on? Or, I mean, I fish 40 lakes on the Boulder a year. I could also let you know what's going on.
Every bit of information you can send us would be helpful. I ask all the time for any reports we can get, and those are very helpful, especially in the spring when guys start going out and going up there. I get tons of calls on which lakes winter killed, and I can't get to all of them. So angler reports are always important, so please send them to me.
Anybody else? Okay. Please state your name one more time as well.
Sean Saunders, Wayne County. Dams. When you mean dam repairs, can you go into a little bit more detail on what that means?
Yeah, if you know where Middle Donkey or Chris Lake is, both of those dams have been breached in the past due to they were not maintained as needed, and there were safety issues, so those were breached. What it means is working with the water users and coming up with some kind of an agreement that they give us a specific amount of water as dead storage in the reservoir in exchange for us coming in and doing the repairs to fixing the lake. Rebuilding the dam.
Okay, so that means draining the lake and then starting over.
Yes and no. In those two cases, Middle Donkey and Chris Lake, there really isn't lakes. Chris Lake has a little bit of water behind it, but compared to what it was historically, it's not even really a lake anymore. Same with Middle Donkey. It's more of a marsh.
What about McGath specifically?
McGath Lake's had a leak in it that it's been threatened to breach that one numerous times. We've had a little bit of a struggle working with the water users, but I think we're getting to a point where that one will happen. I don't think we'll have to completely drain that one. It will require lowering it a little bit, but it's at a minimum pool right now, and we could see definite increase in the amount of water there if we get that fixed.
Okay. Wrote known plans for 2014, some of the ones that you mentioned on there, those are going to happen in 2014 with Donkey, or?
No, what that means is this year we'll start working towards the public process. The very earliest, and I think this is very ambitious, would be fall of 2015 before that could be treated. But we'll start working with talking to anglers, holding public meetings, working with the Forest Service, doing all those steps that we have to do before that can be done. And so part of what we're doing here today is part of that process, but it'd be 15 before anything could be done there.
Anybody else? Richard, we appreciate those two presentations. Very well done. We also appreciate the questions from the audience. As we move forward, our first action item is item number 7, fishing guidebook and rule R657-13. This will be Drew Cushing. Also, as we go forward, following questions from the rack, we'll have questions from the audience as well. If you want to make comments, please fill out the comment cards, and those are in the back with the officers, and they can bring them forward. So, Drew, we'll turn the time to you.
Thank you, Dave. First of all, I'd like to recognize Paul Birdsey, my counterpart. He's the Coldwater Sport Fish Coordinator, and my name is, again, Drew Cushing, the Warm Water Sport Fish Coordinator. And I'm sure you guys are excited to hear about fishing after 11 months of hearing about hunting. So this is our one time a year to kind of tell you what's going on. So here we go. This is broken up into three parts. We're going to talk about some statewide things. We're going to talk about the survey results from this year, and then we'll get into each region specifically. And then at the end, after you vote, Richard has two slides for some cutthroat introductions that will take place after the vote. So every year for the past several years, well, you know, we went away from the spring informational rack, mostly because we weren't getting the interaction with the public that we thought we could, that we needed to make good decisions. So we went to this online survey where we asked just the general public, you know, questions, both specific to ideas we have, or I guess there were ideas specific to what our managers requested for regulation changes as far as concepts. And then there was feedback from the public, and we wanted to know how the rest of people felt about those. And then as those thoughts generated anything else that came up. And so the last question on these was just an open-ended question, just trying to probe folks to see, you know, what their ideas were, how we were doing, and whether they thought we could do better in any specific area. So this last year, we left it open for about a month. We had 1,300 responses, give or take, and we asked 13 questions. 750 of the respondents, 750 responded in that last question, which was just an open-ended question. Tell us what you think. Give us your ideas. 294 of those last comments were related to regulations. The remainder were management questions, which we handed over to Richard and all the other, or the rest of the four managers, and just asked them to consider those as they move forward this year for future years in management changes and thoughts as to things they may want to improve on. So out of those, one of them was, you know, where the first question, or the, in the right end, the most popular thing that people talked about was the stream access issue, which has been going on for 3 or 4 years. The next most popular thing was law enforcement. It was almost universally, everybody that, you know, it was seemed like time and time again, people requested that we have more law enforcement and that there's a lack of law enforcement out there. And then there was also a couple others that were kind of really novel, no license for active military, and then no license for over 70, which maybe I'll get there one day. All right, moving on. We asked a question specific to spearfishing, which has been a hot topic the last several years, or this was part of the write-in. And of the people, there was a lot of people that requested less opportunities for spear fishermen statewide. This is kind of an issue that's come up, like I said, the last 3 or 4 years, and it's really two user groups that have conflict with one another. And so there's a real rift there, and we're trying to work with both those groups as we speak. And then there was a growing interest in bow fishing opportunities for all game species statewide. Right now you can bow fish for carp, but no other species of fish. And so this seems to be a growing issue. Furthermore, and this goes with all of the other surveys that we've done, we completed a statewide angler survey in 2011. And the majority of the anglers want larger fish, and they want more regulations, which go with larger fish in their mind. And so in this survey, it was really a popular thing. You know, they wanted more regulations. So they want slot limits. They want, you know, catch and release. They want flies and lures only. They want those kind of opportunities, and they want less of the, you know, hook 'em and cook 'em kind of opportunities, the 10-inch, 8-inch rainbow trout. And so they want the, you know, more quality, which I might say go along with the thoughts that Richard and his staff had on both Boulder Mountain and the Fish Lake Management Plan. Moving on, last year we passed a legislative item that allowed us, or allowed anglers, to dispose of fish species which would occur, like catch and kill regulations, or fish that we have no limit on. And so that passed last year, and we have a couple additions we'd like to make to that. And so we have to add the water and the fish species which we want the catch, or this disposal allowance for. Blue Lake Paku, which are a relative of the piranha, they're actually a vegetation eater, but they were illegally introduced there probably by some aquarium owner, and now they're reproducing there and doing quite well. As such, we'd like to allow people, if they do catch one, that they could kill it and they wouldn't have to take it home. They could just throw it back in the water, you know, poke it and put it back in. Fish Lake, and this goes with the management plan that's in place, There's going to be, or we're recommending, a no limit on yellow perch, but associated with that, you know, we would like the perch, if they did catch one and didn't want to take it home, that they could dispose of it back into the lake. And then there's several reservoirs down in the Virgin River area, which is covered in a recovery program with the Virgin River fishes. And there's waters where smallmouth bass were illegally introduced, and they're gaining ground there in those reservoirs. And as such, we would like anglers, if they catch a smallmouth bass, which are prohibited in that drainage, that they would be allowed to dispose of them. So same thing, back into the reservoir, not alive, because these have a regulation of catch and kill, which we'll be talking about in just a minute. Last year, we had a wildlife board action item we were asked to look into. We did that. We were asked to explore an allowance for spearfishing at all waters that have catch and kill regulations on them for the species that have a catch and kill regulation for those species. We completed the survey, and there was support for this in the survey on a couple waters, Green River and Utah Lake. We talked to Groga, which is Green River Guides and Outfitters. They're the fly fishing guides in the Green River below Flaming Gorge. As you know, it's a really popular fly fishing river stretch for brown trout, and it's really crowded as well, not to mention the fact you have floaters and boaters that use that as well. And so they felt this would be a conflict between the users that are there and a potential interest in these spear fishermen using the same water in a constricted area. And then the other one that had support was on Utah Lake for northern pike, which is another illegal introduction in a water where we have an endangered fish. Then Sand Hollow, Gunlock, and Quail reservoirs were almost evenly split. So 50% of the respondents said that they supported spearfishing on those for those species, and 50% said they didn't. We talked to state parks, and they were opposed to this because those are crowded lakes, and there would be user conflicts on those waters. As such, with the information we got back, which was somewhat conflicted, what we would like to do is do the same thing that we've been doing. We would like to approach additional spearfishing waters one at a time. We would like to be able to evaluate, all of the potential biological damage that could be done, confusion between different species of fish, size restrictions for different species of fish, and then the conflict between user groups. So that's what we'd like to move forward with at this point. Okay, and I just wanted to follow up. We did some research recently, just trying to figure out, where other states are at with their view and their stance on spearfishing. What we found is that Utah is really liberal, which is surprising me, because Utah is conservative in most of the other things that we talk about. Six of the states have explicit prohibitions completely on spearfishing statewide. 31 states allow spearfishing for non-game fish only. So those would be your carp, suckers, and other fish, excluding game fish, of course. One state allows spearfishing for non-game fish, but only with a special license. So it isn't a fishing license. It's actually a spearfishing license that you'd need to procure, and then you could fish for non-game fish, once again, excluding all game fish. Five states allow spearfishing, much like we do. They have various waters where they allow spearfishing, then other waters that they don't, and for various species. So not all species, not universally, but just some species, and it really is kind of what we're doing here. And then there are a number of other states that didn't even mention spearfishing anywhere in their proclamation guide or rule, which could mean that it's implicitly allowed or it's implicitly prohibited, and we didn't follow up on those, so those could go either way. Just a little bit of background. Before 2008, underwater spearfishing had a two-fish limit, and the limit was one under 22 inches and one fish over 22 inches. What that did is it created a different set of regulations for them than everybody else, and an example of that would be if Fish Lake was open to fishing, they could actually possess a 22-inch tiger muskie there, where the rest of the angling world couldn't possess one less than 40 inches. And so it really created a conflict. It created an issue for us when we were asked to certify state records for spear fishermen that were illegal to possess for other anglers. And so we chose in 2008 to change that and make the spearfishing limit consistent with the rest of the anglers. which we did. And before 2008, there were 12 waters that were open to spearfishing. In 2008, we opened two additional. And since then, we've opened a number of additional, and now there's a total of 22 waters open to spearfishing for a variety of different species. So we are moving forward with this as opportunities allow. Underwater spearfishing, we would like to open spearfishing to in Blue Lake for pacu, which again were illegally introduced. And like I said, it's that toothy critter on the left. It's a relative of piranha, but it eats plants. It grows quite large, and we think it came from an aquarium introduction. We would like to have as many of those removed as possible, and would like to invite spearfishermen out there to help us remove those. Another Wildlife Board action, they asked us to look at an allowance for possession at home. So once you catch a fish and you take it home to your freezer, we were asked to explore whether or not the public would want that to be removed from possession. So it would just become your freezer, and then you could go back out another day and catch some additional fish of that species. We did that. We followed through with the survey in 2014, and there was good support on this survey. However, we do have some concerns. Our regional managers have a number of waters where, such a regulation. The southern region has Panguitch Lake, Otter Creek, and community fisheries, where you could go there, and Panguitch Lake would be an example of where you have an out-of-state contingent which would go there and catch trout and put them in their camper freezer, and just continually do that through the summer. And so what our regional managers asked us to do is approach this cautiously. We know that we have under-harvest on our warm and cool water fish. 95% of our black bass are being released. Those are our largemouth and smallmouth. Our catch and keep on walleye is gone down in a number of our waters. And so this kind of thing might benefit us there, but at the same time, a number of our managers have concern in trout in many of our trout waters, just because of a potential impact if that over-harvest does happen. And so what we would like to do is do this in two steps. Move forward with the warm and cool water part of this, so those would no longer count as part of your possession when they reach your freezer. And then we have a couple of waters which we just finished a creel survey, Starvation and Willard Bay. Starvation has solely warm and cool water fish, or Willard Bay has just warm and cool water fish, and Starvation has trout, both brown trout and rainbow trout, and then it has a host of warm and cool water fish as well. Since we just finished a creel, we know what the harvest was on those waters. What we'd like to do is be given 2 years, so give till 2016, to follow up with some additional creel surveys on both those waters and just evaluate whether this has impacted people's decision-making process, whether they actually take more fish home because of this regulation or whether it makes no difference to them. If it doesn't make a difference, we'll move forward with it. If it does, we need to be cautious with the cold water side of things. So that's what we'd like to recommend at this time. Furthermore, in order to do this, there's a couple things we need to do. So we need to define what cool and warm water fish species is. And those are all fish that are not trout. And we have a definition in there for what a trout is, so we just need to spell it out that this is just for warm and cool water fish. And then we need to furthermore define what a permanent residence is, and we need to kind of ensure that a camper is not your permanent residence. So we helped our lawyers helped us with this definition. A permanent residence is the domicile an individual relies upon in establishing residency for the purpose of Utah code. So what that says is that's kind of where you get your mail. That's where you get your bills paid. That's what you use to establish residency in Utah. And hopefully that discerns the place where you live versus your summer camper or your motorhome. All right, now moving into the region-specific waters. So we're going to start with the southern region since we're here. These are exactly what Richard talked about earlier. We're recommending a no limit on yellow perch, which are overabundant in Fish Lake. It's part of the management plan that has already been talked about and the group has completed. So we would like to move forward with that. Furthermore, that we'd like to change the trout limit to 4 fish and then reduce the 28 to 24 and get rid of some of those 24-inch fish and hopefully get some more lunkers in there, some of those larger 30-inch fish that Richard discussed earlier. Okay, Lake Powell, this is a no-brainer. Last year, you guys adopted a recommendation to allow striped bass, which, as you know, become overabundant. Their condition goes down. They're basically unedible. They're all skin and bones. And so what we did last year was allow them to be wasted, which means you could, release them back into the water but not alive if you so choose. And that, again, assists our management at Lake Powell. However, dead striped bass at that time couldn't be used as bait or chum. And if you can throw them back in a water hole, it makes sense that you could probably cut them up into pieces and use them to assist you in catching other fish species. So this seemed like a no-brainer. The Boulder Mountains, this is a result of the management plan that Richard talked about. This is a simplification, and it assists us in managing more directly and doing what we need done in those waters specifically. So the first thing, we have a really complicated description of what the Boulder Mountains are, and it's always been problematic. And myself, I've been on the boulders, and I'm not sure I was within the boundary or not. And so, this is easier. What it does is it removes that description and removes that list of waters under that description. And then each one that has a special regulation is identified one by one by one within the water specific. So it'd be any water would be identified by name. And so they'd be any special regulation would be identified as such. And moving forward with that, there's this ice fish enclosure. These are the waters that Richard identified as potentially being fished out in the wintertime. There's some springs and some places that people could, target these fish and basically fish them out in the wintertime. And so as the management team recommended, we would like to keep them closed to ice fishing, which is within these dates. Okay, Oak Creek Reservoir. This is the stunted brook trout fishery Richard alluded to. There's two options that they explored. They would like to move forward, the group would like to move forward with this one first. This is a liberalization, basically a quadrupling of the brook trout limit on at Oak Creek Reservoir. And the intent would be to hopefully remove as many as possible and increase the size so you could actually have something that anglers appreciate. If this fails, then as he said, it might be, time to do a chemical treatment and start over with sterile brooks. This is that illegal introduction in the Virgin River Basin. We have Sand Hollow, Gunlock, Quail Creek, and those are reservoirs, and there's a prohibition. We can't manage a smallmouth bass within that drainage because of some endangered fish species. And if we can't manage them, they really shouldn't exist there. So this is step one. There's already a no limit on smallmouth bass. There was a thought that anglers couldn't discern a smallmouth from a largemouth bass. However, the region came to us and declared that those largemouth bass aren't being kept in enough numbers to really, sway an angler either way if they did get them confused. And so it was a no harm to the largemouth in their opinion. So we're going to move forward with a catch and kill regulation. And once again, these are an illegal introduction. These are waters that the southern region has been working with for 3 years at least. This was kind of a directive from the Wildlife Board, and just to explore some access and to allow ice fishing in these waters. The southern region has done that, and as such, we'd like to remove the seasonal closure, and these would provide additional ice fishing opportunities. Johnson Reservoir, historically we have had a one inch by 1 inch square bait maximum size on our tiger muskie waters, and the thought was is that if you use a larger, like a whole perch, that a tiger muskie would deeply ingest that, and that was a result of some hooking mortality. There was some recent research that came up on tiger muskie fisheries in the Midwest. It said that smaller bait size, which makes sense, is swallowed deeper than a big bait size, and therefore you have additional hooking mortality, not less. And so we would actually like to remove that and allow people and hopefully encourage them to use a little bit larger bait so those tiger muskie aren't deeply hooked and we don't see the delayed mortality from them being hooked in the gills and being handled for too long. And this is to save some tiger muskie lives, which are a very valuable fish to the Division of Wildlife. Cottonwood and Bullock reservoirs, same thing. This is in northeast region. So these are, again, tiger muskie waters, and we'd like to remove that bait restriction from those waters. Blue Lake, this is that ill angler deduction which we had a recommendation to allow spear fishing. We'd like to have a catch and kill on Paku for all anglers, and so this is an illegal introduction, and if they catch one, we'd like them to kill it, and if they so choose, we'd like them to throw back in the water and not force them to take it home or release it alive. Bear Lake, we changed the two-rod permit where Utah anglers don't need a two-rod permit to fish in Utah. You can fish with two rods under your regular license. However, that doesn't mean that you can do that in Idaho. So all this does is clarify that if you're fishing north of the Utah-Idaho border, you need to adhere to Idaho law. And if you need a two-rod permit up there, you want to fish with two rods, you need to get a two-rod permit. And the northern region, Logan River, this is, the black is the new regulation. Basically, there's a pond or ponds on that stretch of the Logan River. And that wasn't the part of the restriction, that wasn't part of the water that they wanted restricted. Basically, they wanted to have a restrictive regulation on the river for fly fishermen who frequent the Logan River. However, there's a couple of ponds up there that they used to encourage people like kids and novice fishermen to go and just fish, and so they stock them. And what they'd like to do is have the statewide for fish regulation, not the restrictive regulation for those newcomers. And so all this is to allow what they want to take place, which is, you know, have a restrictive regulation for the avid fly fishermen, and then have a beginning kind of fishing experience. And if you catch a small fish, you can take it home and you can use bait there. We have a new community fishery in the southeast region, Knight Ideal Community Fishing Pond. It's in Wellington. And as such, you know, we have a two fish, regardless of species, limit on all community fisheries, and we'd recommend that same limit there. Just a couple other slides. We're done with the regional specific stuff. We had a survey that was completed by a firm this last spring, and what I want to do is just kind of, you know, these are the number one priority or the priorities in selecting where to fish. And so we asked both active anglers and lapsed anglers, you know, what was their priority in selecting a place. And so we talked about, you know, the Boulder Mountains and the quality of fish and you know, we have enough fish. And what this means to us is on the left are active anglers. And as you see, the number one priority on you know, people's choice of where to go is they want to catch good-sized fish. And the there will be lots of fish available is number three. And so Richard's trying to weigh those needs and desires of anglers and turn them into reality. We feel that we can do better by, you know, better for our constituents in offering a variety of opportunities. And so we finished this survey, and I just wanted you guys to see it because, as you see, you know, the lapsed anglers, which are the guys that fell out of the fold, you know, they're the folks that fished once upon a time and didn't fish recently. And to them, you know, crowding is the number one priority for them. And so we have to have those kind of opportunities in order to get people back in the fold. And then, you know, active anglers need something different. This goes back to, you know, I wanted to say or to show you this because it really goes back to the good work that Richard and his staff did. So. And then lastly, this is a continual discussion with anglers, so I felt like this would be a good time to talk about this. The 450 millimeter on the side, this is a Willard Bay graph, and this just displays kind of what we're seeing in most of our warm and cool water fisheries, and it really has relevance to what we're talking about. On the bottom we have age, and on the left going up we have you know, size of fish, and as you see, the fish in Willard Bay grow really quickly up to about year 4 or 5, and then they just stop. And that 450 is about 20 inches. And for the rest of their life, they don't grow. And why this is important is fish in the right conditions have indeterminate growth, which means that through day one to the end of their life, theoretically, they should never stop growing. And so this line should be starting at zero there and having a diagonal line through time through the end. And this isn't what we see at Willard Bay, and it isn't what we see at a number of our bass fisheries, most of our bass fisheries. This curve can go one of two ways. This is just one example where these fish, and the way to read this is they have enough to eat, and they really do well early in life. By age 4 or 5, they run out of food. The food can't supply the growth. And so what they do is for the rest of their life, they just exist, but they don't grow. And the other way that you could see, or the other example we have of this, is if you invert this line, we have a number of our bass waters where the young bass don't grow at all through year 1 to 5. And then, after all of the, you know, the ones that can't hack it die off, there's forage enough for those larger fish, and there's a forage size that they pass, a gap that they pass where they can actually start accelerating in growth. And these are the two things that we see, and this is common to our warm and cool water fish. Now, in Willard Bay, you know, that size that they kind of flatten out is actually a quality size. You know, a 20-inch walleye is not a bad-sized walleye. But you could do better if you could remove some of those fish early and allow more of that forage for those larger fish. And so I just wanted you guys to take a look at that, because that's relevant to kind of the discussion we've been having. Thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Do you have any questions from the rack? You must have done a really good job. Any questions from the audience? The loss.
One question real quick.
Hold on. Yeah. Okay.
All the surveys you talk about, are they a random survey, or are they on your website, or how do you get involved in those surveys?
They're an internet survey. That was the easiest way to go about it. And, you know, we felt there was, it's not scientific by any means, but it gives us an idea of the people that are interested on a topic. The response, you know, the people who aren't interested, we felt wouldn't respond, and the ones that were would.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. I might say that if you're talking about the angler, the yearly survey that we do, that's online. The other surveys were scientific. So the 2011 angler survey, the statewide, was scientific. And then the graph that I showed on Willard Bay was actually a result of a creel survey and some age and growth. And so that's scientific. And then the survey that the group did, that we hired, that was scientific as well. So does that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anybody else? Okay, DeLost. Oh, sorry, Jake.
Jake Albrecht. Drew, on the slide you had on spearfishing, comparing spearfishing from other states, what percentage of spearfishers come from outside of our state, and what kind of money do they pay compared to what the locals do?
To be honest, Jake, we really don't know how many spearfishermen we have in the state. We know that we have a contingent of spearfishermen that come from Colorado. We don't know how many. The only thing that they do buy is their regular out-of-state fishing license. And so, but as far as numbers, we really don't know. What is an out-of-state license? Combination is 75, and just the fishing license is?
Fishing 75.
Okay.
So is Colorado on the liberal side or the conservative side on the spearfishing?
I believe they were conservative. I believe they were non-game only, as I recall.
Okay, the loss.
The loss, Christensen, Glenwood. Question. I've been told, and I haven't experienced this personally, but I've been told by some of the folks from here in the valley who use our little mountain lakes on Monroe Mountain as kind of our urban fishery, because we don't have a pond for kids and old men to fish out of. And apparently, sometime in the last year or two or three maybe, the size of fish that they've been putting in those ponds has changed from 7 or 9 inches to 6 to 7 inches. And we only have a growing season up there of about 3 or 4 months. And the local folks who fish that a lot say it's just not worth fishing up there, because they're going to fish to catch fish to eat. That's why they're going. And a 7 to an 8 inch fish just doesn't get large enough to make a very edible fish by the end of October, when that fishery kind of ends up there. Just wondering if there might be some consideration for some of these urban small lakes that some of these smaller communities use for stocking a little bigger fish, so that those fish would be a little more edible.
I'll give you the statewide answer, and then I'll let Richard follow up with his regional perspective. From a statewide perspective, there is rationale for stocking bigger fish. We have some exceptions for the Mirror Lakes up north, the Manti Lakes, for stocking a little larger fish. It's based on use, and we have to evaluate use and then, you know, the return on those fish. There is one other answer, is that our budget is flat in our hatchery system. And so, you know, we talked about we have enough money to do what we need to do, and we have the fish we need. However, with a certain amount of money, you can have, you know, 50,000 of this size or 20,000 of this size. And so if you ask for bigger fish, you're probably going to get fewer of them.
I think in this particular case, maybe those who have been expressing that concern would say, rather have a little fewer fish and get to have some blue larger size.
Just real quick to add to that, I'm very aware of the situation up there. I've talked to a lot of people that have mentioned that issue, and there's a number of issues around the region. To answer your question, we will be looking and evaluating the fish size and numbers this fall before we get into a freeze and we lose what's left in the lake. It'll help give us some ideas of where we're at. We're just getting information from anglers. This will help give us that solid information, and we will be looking at what we need to do to maybe improve that, the loss. So it's on our mind right now, and it's something we're looking at for the next year or two to make that decision and solve that. And I'm assuming your big Annabelle deep lakes are the ones you're talking about. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Okay, we'll move to the comment section. I have 2 comment cards. The first one is Ken Strong.
Ken Strong, representing Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife. I thank you for the opportunity to address the RAC here, and I've also had a great time this year working with Paul Birdsey and Drew Cushing. They're 2 fine men, and we've worked together on a lot of this stuff. We haven't agreed on everything, but we haven't beat each other up yet. Right now, Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife accepts all the proposals that Drew has given up to this point, except for not having the trout on the taking off the limit once you get them home. We would like the trout added with all fish. Once they get to your primary domicile, they no longer count on your limit. There are several reasons for this. One of them, to give you an example, of the boulders. Talk about raising the brook trout limit to 16. That means if somebody goes up there fishing, they spend a night, they can actually bring 32 brook trout home. Once they get 32 brook trout home, they can't go fishing anywhere until those fish are consumed down below a normal limit of below 8 fish before they can go again. So they're asking the public to help them out, and then in the process, the public kind of gets punished for helping them out. One of the other things they've worried about, the people, it was mentioned, Panguitch Reservoir, where the people come up and stay in their trailers, was suggested by Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife that we use the primary domicile, which Drew talked about. That would include the place you vote from. You don't vote from your trailer or your mountain cabin or anywhere else. You vote from one place, and that's your primary domicile. Another thing on the survey that Drew talked about, a slight majority of the people wanted the limit taken off all fish once they get to your home. One thing about this is it's a rule that in the last 20 to 30 years has been enforced twice. It's basically unenforceable. If it's unenforceable, why really have it on the books? Another thing that came in the survey was people were saying, I didn't know it was against the law to have fish in your freezer. They already thought it was that way, which it isn't. But therefore, the people that are most likely to consume more fish, bottle them or freeze them, are probably already doing that now, so it wouldn't make much of a decrease on the fish that are being produced. When it's only been two or three times in the last 30 years that it's been enforced, it's an issue that shouldn't be there. I just want to say thanks for your time. Thanks for the great work that you guys do. Thanks for the Wildlife Board and the Fishing Game. They're making great leaps this year in fishing and making the state of Utah the number one place in the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. The next card to have is Brad Bradley, followed by Duas.
I wasn't going to stand up, but it looked like too much fun to do it. So I like to watch the hair stand up on the back of Richard's neck when I get up here. I was just looking at a few things when they put the internet survey up here. I don't know. I have a little bit of a problem with internet surveys. In other words, the only people who vote on them are the ones that kind of get invited. I happened to see it in the Richfield Reaper, so I thought I better chime in and vote on it. So, you know, it kind of appeals to just a special interest audience and those who want to put forth the effort. It really doesn't tap, you know, you can see there's our little group here, but I can guarantee that out there in Richfield, there's thousands and thousands of fishing licenses that probably have an opinion, but they just don't have the interest to take the time. Plus, I have a little bit of a problem with internet surveys like SurveyMonkey. If you go in and delete the cookie, you can vote again. I only voted for the immediate family members. I didn't use my whole contact list, okay? So I'd really approach those internet surveys with a grain of salt. I saw Drew's article in the newspaper encouraging retention of harvest, bringing fish home. And last year, you know, I stood up here and I said, let's go with an 8-fish limit. And I listen tonight, and every time we talk about the limit, we want a little bit of harvest, we want them home, the regulations keep getting more and more complex on that. Back to 2002 and prior, that 8-fish, people caught them, they had enough fish, they took them home. It's easy to understand. You get 8 fish in possession, you can do it. You don't have to do it on one day, and then 4 on the next day, and you can only clean so many of them, and others have to be... Let's just make it easy. I don't think that'll go anywhere, but I'm going to throw that out again. The other thing I saw on the internet survey, which really made me have to stand up, and I don't know why, it just kind of prompted me when I was sitting at home the other night. And I didn't know that the more regulation thing was going to come up with that high of a response on the internet survey. But I got kicking around and I got thinking about slot limits. And I need a little help from Richard because I know he was in the central region for a while. 1991, Provo River above Deer Creek, general regulation on walleye, or is that a restricted?
Above Deer Creek, I don't remember on walleye. Probably the same as what the lake was.
As Deer Creek, so it'd be general reg.
Yeah.
Okay, Well, that answers that question. So I went through the trophy fisheries that's listed on the division's website. So if you look at this chart, everything that's not in green is caught in a general regulation water. Okay? There's only like five waters that had special regulations that produce trophy fish. Okay? The more you protect the fish, the less likely you are you're going to put a fish in the record book. And it comes from what we talked about getting too many fish in the pond. And I really think you're worse off with too many fish in the pond than not enough fish. You can always restrict harvest a little bit and increase the fish, but once you get too many fish, nobody wants them. So I'd be really cautious about slapping a whole bunch of slot limits, regulations, and what they accomplish. That's just some thoughts for you to consider. So I said my piece. I'll go sit back down.
Thank you, Brad.
Lars Christensen. Before this meeting, I called a few of the local folks to see if they might come and express their opinion on the day limit and possession limit on fish. When I told them that they could only have, I told them they could only have four fish in their possession, they didn't want to come. They didn't want anybody to see who they were. I don't think anybody knows that's the law. Nobody's applying that. I had a fellow at the gas station this afternoon say, well, what about the fish I just brought from Henry's Fork that I caught this weekend? Can I have those? How are they going to tell if they check me if those Idaho fish were caught in Otter Creek or here? So it just doesn't seem very logical to have just four fish and then have to gorge yourself. If you're a single guy, that's a lot of fish every day. But it just doesn't seem to be very practical. It may not be practical to have people canning fish on the shoreline, and I understand that. Maybe this law got put in place by three or four knotheads doing something that we thought was going to become a trend, and so we had to put a regulation in place. But maybe we need to reconsider that and set a little different regulation there. Thanks.
Thank you, DeLoss. That's all the comment cards I have. Do we have comments from the RAC members? Sam, Rusty, do you guys have a comment you want to share with us?
So I'll ask you, DeLoss, we're talking about rainbow trout. Right, okay. And you're suggesting that you can have as many as you want in your residence instead of having some kind of a limit on it?
Yeah, right now it's four.
It's actually eight.
It's eight.
Eight. Right. They're not counted anymore.
You're not going to have seals going to people's homes and looking at the anyway. And if somebody's missed it even on the reservoir, coming back and catching boatloads, somebody needs to ask somebody to check on people like that.
Right, but if someone was doing that and we eliminate the possession rule, then they can do that.
As long as they're not taking up more than they can.
So Lynn's telling me that we're not getting any of this on the recording, so just for the record, that conversation was about removing the possession limit on trout once you reach your permanent residence.
That's my fault. Do we have any other comments from the RAC? You want to come to the mic?
Okay.
Okay. I just have a question. All the major fisheries, Strawberry, Deer Creek, Fish Lake, you know, all our major fisheries, we collect creel census data on them. I know that prior to, I don't know, middle 90s, about 91 or something, there was a lot of creel census done on small lakes. Okay? So I'm going to put the biologist in the hot seat, and you're probably not going to have that information today, but do we have any information on what the average creel when an angler is finished and goes home? Now, I asked this question because I had an argument with a biologist one time. And we went in circles about 8-fish limit, 4-fish limit. And the comment was, most people don't catch 4 fish anyway. Of course, my comeback was, if they don't catch 4 fish, then why do we even worry about a limit? In other words, do we have a guess of what the average fisherman leaves the pond with? If they don't catch more than 8, then we start to move into kind of a moot point range of how many fish, what our ceiling should be on our limits. It would be nice to know what the average take home. When I asked that question to friends on the internet, on Facebook and stuff, and you've got 2 adults and 3 kids up fishing, and I say, how many fish did you catch on that trip? Just for my curiosity. And they tell me, well, we came home with like 4. I'm going like, well, you had 5 anglers in the water. You only came home with 4 fish. So there's some people that no matter how they fish, you can put dynamite on their hook, they'll never catch a fish. There's other people that are going to catch a limit every time. But it would be nice to know what that average fisherman take home is if we have some creel census data that we can look at.
Thank you, Brad. Any other comment? Oh, Richard's going to comment to that.
Yeah, just to address what Brad was kind of asking, I've conducted a lot of creel surveys over the years, and what we see in kind of an average as he's looking for is we see catch rates of about 0.5 fish per hour or a catch rate of 1 fish every 2 hours. It's on an average of a reservoir, most of our reservoirs, and that's kind of a goal we shoot for as well. As far as a harvest rate, it varies depending on species, things like that. For trout species, you're looking at around 0.2 fish per hour. So every 5 hours of fishing, you see 1 fish harvested. Now that's over everybody in a survey. Now one other piece of information as you guys are discussing this that may be really valuable to you, when you're talking limits with fishing, and this is something I learned back in college and something that I see all the time, is when you're talking about a 4-fish limit, an 8-fish limit, a 2-fish limit, limits don't necessarily affect all the time how many fish are taken out of a lake. And if we use Otter Creek as an example, if I had a 4-fish limit or an 8-fish limit, every year I'm going to have almost the same number of fish harvested out of that lake. What the limit does is by reducing that from an 8 to a 4, it distributes those fish amongst more anglers. So if you have an 8-fish limit, fewer people take home fish because there's only so many fish in the lake. If you have a 4-fish limit, more people get to take home fish. Does that might help and is applicable to the conversation.
Thank you, Richard. Any further comments from the rack? Then we must be ready to entertain a motion. Let me just recap while you're formulating a motion. We heard from the SFW. They supported the DWR's presentation with the exception that the trout not count on your limit once you take those home to your freezer. I think we heard that same sentiment from DeLoss as well. We also heard from Brad a suggestion of raising the limit to from 4 fish to 8 fish. So those will be some things that you may want to consider or not as you formulate your motion.
I'll try a motion here to accept the recommendations of the division with the exception of the home limit restriction. That work?
We need to be a little bit more specific to trout, probably.
Okay, to trout.
I'll
fish, including trout, would there be no limit to have that in residence? All fish.
Okay, all fish.
Including trout.
Including trout.
No limit as long as it's your permanent residence.
To have no, no limit at your, okay. I'm
getting... So it's actually the possession limit, not the limit, the daily limit, right? The possession
right.
limit.
Right.
To remove the possession limit for all species of fish, whereas the division's recommendation was to remove it for only warm water and cool water fish. Is that?
Yeah, that's what happened. Right. Right.
Yeah, I think he...
Read that like it is and just take that all fish and not trout.
Okay, you
want
to
include trout, though, right?
Yeah, right. That's on this excludes.
Oh, okay. Right.
So you want to read that one more time, Rusty?
Right. Oh, sorry. Okay. To accept the division's recommendations with the exception of including trout in the possession at the permanent resident. Does that make sense?
In the removal of the possession limit at the domicile.
Right.
Okay. Let me read the motion then as I understand it. Okay. I'll wait for Kevin. There was also a comment from the SFW that the domicile definition include the location from where you vote. I don't know if you want to include that or not.
Yes, I'd like to include that too. That's a good idea.
I'll help you with your motion then. Okay.
Okay, try that.
This is the way I understand the motion then. To accept the motion. Accept the recommendation presented by the DWR with the exception to include trout in the removal of the possession limit once they are at the permanent domicile and to include where a person votes in the definition of domicile. Does that meet the intent of your motion? Okay. Do we have a second on the motion? We have a second by Sam. Do we have any discussion on the motion? Okay. Claire?
I would just have one question for someone in the division. The description you gave of the permanent residence, is that the same as a voting where you vote? Is it already included in that permanent? You quote it, put it on a code or something like that?
Yeah, that's if you apply for like a license, whether you're resident or non-resident, it would be that address.
Is that the same as a voting address?
Maybe not. This is one that was given to us by our lawyers, and you know we'd have to talk to them about you know what fits because it's not just the Division of Wildlife definition. It's other agencies as well, and so we would have to kind of work within the framework we have.
Yeah, I would assume they're close, Claire, but I don't know. But
that's what I would think.
For the record, to establish residency for the purposes of hunting and fishing, you have to have it has to be your permanent residency for 6 months or longer before you establish residency for the purpose of applying for tags or buying licenses. So that's the definition that they're talking about.
And that's the same definition for voting, also. I think. There's close. That's what I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
On your permanent domicile, I mean, that doesn't really have a lot of bearing if you're here for the summer, though, as far as that restriction. I mean, you may be from Nevada up here and have a cabin here for 5-6 months of the year, so, and you may vote in Nevada, so I'm not sure that has a lot of bearing, or a primary residence has much to do with the possession limit, really, does it?
Well, Drew can chime in here if he likes. I think what they were trying to avoid is people that are just going to, you know, the whole idea of a trailer, you know, parked in a campground and calling that a domicile. What this would do, if the motion, you know, eventually passes the Wildlife Board, is it would remove the possession limit essentially for permanent residents of Utah. You would still have, if I'm understanding anything correctly, a possession limit of 2 days, which consists of 2 days limit for just the situation you were describing. Somebody that has a cabin at Panguitch Lake and they're there 4 months out of the year, that wouldn't qualify as their permanent residence, and so they would not be excluded from the possession limit. And so it would keep things exactly the way they are for non-residents. It would remove the possession limit for residents, essentially, is what we're talking about. Yes, and they would be fishing on a non-resident license. Exactly. So it makes it does add some clarification for enforcement.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Well, so we are including the language the department has on the resident as well as the voting place. We will keep the language.
That's the way the motion states right now. Okay. All those in favor? So unanimous? Motion carries. Okay, we'll move to our last action item, which is on the native cutthroat trout new introductions, and I believe that'll be Richard that presents that for us.
Gee, somebody's tall. Thanks. I'll go through this fairly quick. What we've sat down in the region and looked at kind of a 5-10 year plan on some of our cutthroat trout or other native species introductions throughout the region. Based on Utah code, this has got to go through the RAC and the Wildlife Board. It's got to additionally go to the counties. We've been to all the counties within our region and presented this information to them. Every county approved this list other than Garfield County, and they decided not to vote on it at the time, to just stay neutral on it at this time. It also went through our RDCC process, where the counties have the opportunity to respond via written comments, and we didn't receive any comments on that. So with that said, I'll just go through this list really quick. These are places we are talking about. We still have a lot of public work to do before we move forward with most of them. Some of them kind of are in the process of going on right now because of fires or other things, but we've got to get it through before we can introduce these fish. So for our Bonneville cutthroat trout, the lower end of Clear Creek, originally that was not when we first come to the RAC and Wildlife Board. We just had the upper tributaries, but because of the Twitchell fire and losing the fish throughout that stream because of ash flows and things like that, we decided to take that all the way down, and the county building redoing the diversion structures at the bottom end provided us an opportunity with some barriers. So we're going to, we want to do the bottom end of that. That's why it's included. Additionally, Mill Creek, which is the lowest tributary up there. Pinto Creek out towards the Newcastle area in Washington County. Bear Creek, there along Bear Valley, along the highway. Mammoth Creek, this is above Mammoth Spring, above the cabin, some of those small tributaries up there. The East Fork of the Sevier River above Trophic Reservoir is an area we're talking about doing restoration for native Bonneville cutthroat. And then Horse Creek and Birch Creek, which are in Garfield County there in Johns Valley area. Southern Leathersides, in the East Fork of the Sevier River above Trophic, we'd reintroduce those up there. There are already some up there. What it'd mean is when we poison that stream to remove all the other fish, we'd put some of those back in as well. And then for Colorado River cutthroat and bluehead sucker, we've talked about Calf Creek. We're in the process of working with the Monument and the BLM to discuss renovating Calf Creek for native trout as well. So that's the list of places we're going to be reintroducing, hopefully some native species, and we need to take that through the rack and the board.
Okay.
Yes.
When you talk about reintroducing the cutthroat, are you talking about killing all the other fish in that fisheries and then kind of like they did up at Garcane?
Yes, yeah.
So, and so in the some upper streams of Mammoth Creek would be totally native cutthroat?
Yes, that's what we're talking about. Above the spring, which is just upstream a little ways from that cabin area and the little community there. So.
Any other questions from the rack?
Can I add a clarification, and you tell me if I'm wrong, Richard? It doesn't mean that you necessarily go back with only native cutthroats. In some instances, they're putting in other sterile fish like tiger trout and things of that nature. Is that correct?
Exactly, and it depends on the situation and some of the. See, all of these, we've still got some work to do with public, you know, talking to the people, making sure that the anglers and public are wanting to do this. This is 5-10 years out. We're just trying to get these things done through this process before we take it to the next step. But in numerous cases, you know, we've used, say, tiger trout in conjunction with these to maintain a good sport fishery if people aren't happy with the cutthroat.
Okay. Question? Go ahead.
Maybe you can elaborate just a little bit. What was there a hang-up with Garfield County, why they didn't vote?
I'm not 100% sure what their hang-up was. They quoted some things that really had nothing to do with fisheries, elk, for example. Well, until we get elk under control, they don't want to approve anything. But they, like I said, they didn't tell us no. They just decided not to vote on it at this time.
I'm working close with them on, I was on the phone this evening with Commissioner Pollock, and we were talking about sage grouse and Alton Coal and some of the work that we're trying to get done there in terms of restoration projects, and I really try to understand what the county's doing, and I didn't quite understand why they would be against that, but
their fear is another listed species, and, you know, really that's what this is all about, is keeping these from being listed, and the work that's gone into this up to this point has kept them from being put on a threatened or endangered list. And as long as we keep moving forward with additional habitat, additional streams with these fish in it, we can keep them off. But it scares them, I think, and that was part of it.
Lastly, I see some of these introductions are in Garfield County, so they're not going to fight it. Doesn't appear.
As of right now, I don't think so. But I think they left the door open to where they can say, well, we didn't approve this. I think that was their kind of stance there. Based on our code, Utah code, it's the Wildlife Board that has the final decision on this, but it's what we do with going to the counties as well. And, you know, right now, we've got some work to do in Garfield County, and we're going to continue to do that. And I don't think I'd move forward with any of these until Garfield County was more open to it.
And, you know, just to clarify, the fact that Richard and his staff even went directly to the counties is an extra step than what's required by the law. What was required was to do the RDCC process, and through that process we received no comments. But knowing, you know, the sensitivity to threaten an endangered species, Richard and his staff, rightly so, went individually to each county and said, listen, this is what we're planning, and that gives an opportunity to answer questions specifically. And so we've already met the requirements of the law relative to the counties, but that doesn't mean we're going to, you know, go over the top of them and do something that they don't want. We'll continue to work closely with all of them and try to resolve whatever concerns we can.
So in the chemical treatment of, say, like the mammoth, is there a possibility of affecting downstream with the chemical treatment?
Yeah, there's always a possibility that we goof up, yeah.
Don't goof up.
But, you know, we use potassium permanganate that neutralizes the rotenone, and we've got a really good success record on that. Generally, we're really good at just killing where we want to kill.
Except the Painless Creek. The last time you did penguins, that was...
Yeah, but it's back to what you always knew it at. It didn't take that long.
Okay, that's it. Is there barriers? Have you got barriers anywhere? Sometimes you talk about having a barrier. You plant above the barrier.
In some cases, we'll have to go in and build barriers where those are necessary.
Do I have any questions from the audience? Come to the mic, please.
A little bit uneasy in asking this question, but confidence in rote noning and treating, I think, is, well, there's some big questions with that. I'm curious if anybody here knows about what happened on the Bicknell Bottoms this last year. Does anybody? I know you know. Anybody else that knows? And I don't think I'm the person to really bring that up as far as details, but I'm not real confident in that procedure. Maybe you could let us know.
Yeah, that wasn't a rote known treatment. That was, we're dealing with disinfecting the Egan hatchery to get rid of cold water disease that was in our trout. Part of that process, they used Clorox to basically bleach the whole hatchery system. Some of that got out, and then we lost somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 to 150 fish in the bottoms. I've spent some time down there since just evaluating exactly how bad that was and felt like, yeah, we lost fish, but it's not the end of the world. And that was, like I said, that wasn't Rotenone, that was Clorox, which is a little bit more difficult to neutralize. And basically we had some seals break on some balloon seals that allowed that to escape.
Sorry, I want to acknowledge you have done some really good work. I appreciate that. There were a lot more fish lost than 150 fish. I have to bring that into question. I've been on the water every week for the last probably 5 months. Fish are not moving up into that fishery. We mentioned Calf Creek, East Fork above Tropic. These are fisheries that we use with regularity in our guide process with clients. I have some main big concerns with that. Just want to make note of that. So,
do you have any other questions from the audience? Please come to the mic.
Matt Sim again. Is that going to include Tropic Reservoir when you treat the streams up above Tropic Reservoir? Are you going to do Tropic Reservoir as well?
We haven't got that far into the planning process at this time, but Tropic Reservoir right now has got a lot of red side shiners in it. And our idea there would be yes, to see if we could get rid of those at the same time and improve the quality of the fishery at Tropic. But like I said, we're not that far along in the planning process on this.
Thank you. I'd like to see Tropic Reservoir be a trophy fishery. So, sounds good.
Okay, I don't have any comment cards for this item. Do we have any comments from the rack?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we accept the native cutthroat presentation as presented by the DWR.
Okay, we have a motion. Looks like we have a second from Rusty. I'm sorry, Harry. We have a third from Harry. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay, Claire.
Yeah, I'd just like to compliment Richard and his crew. I've worked with him in the past, and they do a marvelous job in
what is expected and desired of them.
Thank you. Mike?
Yeah, I'd just like to encourage you to continue, even though you've already met the requirements that the state requires you to meet on public notification and information, but I'd encourage you to work with the commissioners and the public and making sure that people know what's going on with these, and because some of them are right in their backyard, they're dear to their heart, and so that's all I would just encourage you to do that.
Thanks, and I agree 100%, and we'll continue to do that.
Okay, if there's no further discussion, we'll vote. All those in favor of the motion? Looks like that's unanimous. That concludes our action items. I have no other business, so we'll call this meeting adjourned. Oh, hold on just a minute.
One question for Richard or someone. Our last fishing meeting, we had an extensive discussion on Navajo Lake. What is the report on that?
The dike repairs are moving forward. We're still looking to get all the funding required. Right now, as far as kind of a tentative schedule, is possibly doing a controlled breach next fall, about a year from now, to start draining the lake down. And then following midsummer, as soon as things dry out, we'd start rebuilding that dike. There's a boat ramp. We're looking at new boat ramps up there. Lots of things going on, but we're moving forward with all of that.
Thanks, Clara. That was a good question. Anybody else? Okay, I'll call this meeting adjourned.